Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and my buddy David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for the word Solartopia, which I wrote. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman here with the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show at PRN. Back for another week. We got a really great, fantastic pair of guests with us. Danny Sheehan, you with us?
I'm right here, Sluggo.
All right, brother. And your wonderful wife, Sarah. Sarah Nelson, you with us?
Hi.
Okay,
I'm right
now,
here.
Are you guys at the ocean as I instructed you to be when you came on the show? Or where are you guys?
We're actually in Chinatown. We just got through having a meeting with a big foundation, and we're sitting in a little the Hop Wu Chinese restaurant.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we had a wonderful dinner together the other night. You guys are just my heroes, and I'm so honored to have you on the show. And you are involved in so many things, the two of you. We've only known each other for 40 or 50 years, and when we first met, you guys were doing the Karen Silkwood case, which wouldn't have happened without you. Became a major motion picture, and you exposed the fact that this wonderful, heroic woman was basically murdered, and we can talk about that later. You also broke many of the stories around Iran-Contra, leading to, as they say, a major motion picture American made, and we can come back to that as well, because I have written a new history of the United States, and I want to make sure that people understand what really happened with Iran-Contra. If you made up what happened with Iran-Contra, nobody would believe it, so I want to get into that. But you are currently now, and most importantly, working on the Keystone Pipeline, the Dakota Pipeline, and you are defending the tribe, especially the leader, Chase Iron Eyes, from criminal prosecution. Can you, the two of you, in whatever sequence you like, give us the exposition, and don't hold back because we got plenty of time here, of what is happening with the Dakota Pipeline fight and the assault of the federal and state government on the tribes that have been trying to preserve the environment up there?
Well, the as many of your listeners may know, there was a huge event that took place over a series of months in Standing Rock, in North Dakota, just below Bismarck, the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and it came about because there was a pipeline being built called the Dakota Access Pipeline, and it was originally intended to be crossing the Missouri River above Bismarck, which is a white community. It's the capital of North Dakota. And we now know through our evidence collection that the people in Bismarck protested that, saying they did not want it to endanger their water. So then the pipeline was moved down to just on the edge of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and it was to be going underneath Lake Oahe, which is their reservation. It's their only source of clean drinking water. And so this was about to endanger the children and the future of the tribe and all members of the tribe if this happened. And so the grandmothers...
Sarah, let me jump in and interrupt you for 1 second. When you say it's going to cross the river,
yes.
Can you describe the physical reality of what they're doing? Are they doing a pipeline? They're doing it under, over, through a bridge. How does this happen physically when they take a pipeline across a body of water?
They go under the river. So they dig. They dig like a tunnel and a pipe. They put it underneath the river. The problem with this is that these companies, and particularly this one, Energy Transfer Partners and Sunoco, okay, there are a number of people in this huge coalition, this conglomerate that is doing this pipeline, but eventually Sunoco will be totally responsible for it. And the history of spills is very disturbing with these companies. And
200
or so spills in 10 years. And so the Lakota people began to organize to protect their water. And this was led by the young people who actually walked and ran across the country to the East Coast to protest this, and also by the grandmothers who began to gather and put up tents on the land that was right near where they were going to go underneath their reservoir, Lake Oahu. And so what they did was they began to gather, and then they began to tell people through Facebook and social media that this was happening. And Chase Ironeyes, who is one of the young leaders in this area and who's very well known even nationally and internationally, because he is the reason why they were able to save and protect the most sacred part of the Black Hills. He launched a campaign online, and it went viral, and they were able to, the tribes were able to win the bids on this land so that it didn't become developed and run over with highways and everything. And so that had already happened.
Let me interrupt you. Is Chase Ironeyes, does he have an official position in the tribe, and how old is he?
Well, he doesn't have an official position in the tribe, but he's known by everyone, and he was the official candidate for the Democratic Party in 2016, running for the single House of Representatives seat that they have in North Dakota. And he is also a person who is very charismatic, very wise, very unifying figure when he speaks. And he's a lawyer. So he knew legally that there were problems here with what they were doing, and he also took action because it was threatening his children and the life of the entire community. So he also put out the call for people to come and help, as well as the grandmothers doing it. And pretty soon, thousands and thousands of people began to come to Standing Rock. And about 350 tribes from around the country and even the world came in support. And you have, no one had seen this kind of unity among American tribes in a century, 150 mm-hmm. years. And so there were 400 religious leaders that came from different faiths. There were 100 women leaders that came. There were just thousands of people who came and set up tents or structures of some kind so that they could stay. And this was, of course, in the winter. This happened in October, November, December, January, February. It was freezing cold, sometimes 30 degrees below. And yet people were basically camped out in the Oshete Sikoan camp, which was the largest, the sacred stone camp. And they were protesting peacefully and in a sacred manner with sacred ceremonies going every day. They were saying no to the pipeline, which would threaten their only source of water. In the meantime, what happened was the energy company brought in Tiger Swan, a private militarized security company, which is an offshoot of Blackwater. And the two companies, Blackwater and Tiger Swan, had been actively operating in the Middle East for years, as well as Afghanistan. And they were, you know, totally adrenalized, violent, and they had all these techniques that they have developed in the Middle East against ISIS and other groups. And
Sarah, let me jump in real quick. These two companies are related or run by or partially owned by Eric Prince, correct? The brother of the horrible Betsy DeVos, who is destroying our school system.
That's exactly right. Eric Prince is the original founder and leader of Blackwater, and the founder and leader of Tiger Swan was the head of anti-terrorism globally for Blackwater. And he then started Tiger Swan. So, they do all their military exercises in North Carolina in the swamps. And what they're now doing, what Tiger Swan is now doing, is trying to get corporate contracts. And of course, they're used to making a lot of money with military Pentagon contracts in the Middle East. And when Energy Transfers asked them to come in and do their security at the Standing Rock confrontation, when they came in, things got very violent. Before that, the relationships between the local law enforcement and the water protectors were normal, even cordial at times. There's actually video footage from some of the social media footage, which we're gathering for months of social media during that period, where you see some law enforcement people dancing with protesters, water protectors. But when Tiger Swan arrived, things changed dramatically. And they began to tell, and we know this from our investigation, because we are now representing Chase Ironeyes in his defense, because he was one of 840-some people who were arrested and falsely charged, for the most part. There's only a very few people that were doing anything that wasn't appropriate. And these people were falsely charged, and they've been legally harassed basically for months and months and months and months as their trials, which only last about 3 hours at a time, have taken place. And now, trials.
Are these federal or state cases? Is the federal government doing this or the state? Both?
Both.
Okay.
A bit different.
Okay.
Yeah. Some were federal, and Chase's case is a state case. And he is the only person of the 840-some cases that is charged with a felony of inciting a riot. And this is because he went out on social media and urged people to come and support the Lakota people who were standing up for their clean water. And so he's charged with that. He could lose his law license. He could go to prison for 5 years. And he's also charged with criminal trespassing. And of course, they're charging him with trespassing on his own land, on the land of the Lakota Sioux. And we know from our legal work that that title was never properly transferred to the federal government. It's Lakota land. So what's different about the case we're doing is, and I should say, when Tiger Swan arrived, then you began to see in the social media coverage of what was happening. You know, you saw water cannons in 20 degrees below weather being sprayed on all the water protectors. You saw concussion bombs being thrown. You saw rubber bullets, one put out one young woman's eye. And you saw the kind of macing and there was even at one point in the beginning dogs that were biting people that the security brought onto the land. Now, this kind of violence was not caused by the protesters and the water protectors. It was caused by Tiger Swan, who was organizing with all the law enforcement, all the FBI, all the National Guard people. And every night, Tiger Swan would have an order of battle meeting, and talk about what the plan would be, the battle plan would be, against the water protectors the following day. And
so this is a Sarah, this is a private army. In other words, these people are
It's a tribe in North Dakota.
No, private army.
Tiger Swan is a private army in southern North Dakota, but the Tiger Swan is a militarized private security company.
So this is basically a fascist police force. I mean, they're not publicly accountable, correct?
Right, exactly. They're not publicly accountable. They didn't even have a license to operate in North Dakota, and that's been exposed. They are looking for corporate contracts to do for corporations what they did for the Pentagon in the Middle East, and they're using all their same tactics. They sent out information to control the media, which they did in the Middle East as well, and they told all these people, the law enforcement people, the National Guard people, and the press, that these water protectors were jihadist terrorists, motivated. Oh, they were anti-Christians, motivated by religious values, and they are eco-terrorists, and you've got to deal with them because they're going to threaten your entire five-state area. And so they did everything they could to make everybody really afraid so that they could run this military operation. And we know that they were sending out this information to the media in this five state area, and we know that they were saying these things at these nightly order of battle meetings. So this lawsuit that we're doing is not only a defense of Chase Iron Eyes, and it has several components to it. It's also an offense to expose and uncover the real culprits in what happened at Standing Rock, and to hold them accountable for their illegalities, their lies, their violence, and their criminality at Standing Rock. And most importantly, we are trying to win legal precedent that will protect ongoing people who are taking action, standing up for their rights, exercising their First Amendment rights to protect their land and water as we see the unfolding and growing impacts of climate change, which is being driven by the fossil fuel industry. On the other hand,
component action in addition to your defense? So you're right. Have you any motions or actions legally that are asking for compensation from Tiger Swan for the damage they've done to people? For example, the woman who lost her eye?
No, not yet, because this is a case. They have charges filed against Chase, and this is in response to that. So this is not was not initiated by us. This is defending Chase, but we are turning it also into, at the same time, a way of holding accountable, exposing. And it's the counteroffensive at the same time that it is a defense. And we've been winning. We had one judge in December who was very good, but he got pneumonia. And then we had another judge that was not good, and Danny removed him from the bench for this case. And now we have a third judge finally, and he just ruled in our favor for 16 motions the other day. Saying to Tiger Swan, Energy Transfers, and law enforcement, yes, you do have to respond to the request for your depositions, for your documents, for your sworn testimony. And he gave
Let me I hope he's got a – Sarah, we're talking with Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson from the Romero Institute. They, among other things, and they are defending – the demonstrators at the Dakota Pipeline fight in North Dakota. How can people reach you and donate and keep up with what you're doing here? We're going to continue, but I want to make sure that we periodically tell our listeners how to get a hold of you.
Yes, there are two. We have websites, but one website is www.romeroinstitute.org. That's our nonprofit. It's a continuation of what used to be called the Christic Institute, and that will show you our two main projects. One is the Lakota Project, which is going after the problem of climate change. The other one is Green Power, which is laying in the solution of renewables as fast as we can. So those are our two main initiatives. By the same token, you can go directly to the www.LakotaPeoplesLawProject.org, which is the website specifically about our Lakota work. And your support would be deeply appreciated right now, because we have a lot of expenses in gathering all this evidence and doing all these depositions, some of which has to be done in other states, because Tiger Swans will have to be done in North Carolina, Energy Transfer Corporation is based in Texas. So we have a lot of expenses that we're facing, and we need the partnership and the support of people everywhere who care about the indigenous people and who care about the climate.
Okay, so proceeding now, you have Sarah Nelson with Danny Sheehan. You have won some victories. What is the name, and where are we right now in terms of the legal process? You've just had some motions granted, and you've removed the judge. So what comes now?
Yes, Dan.
What comes now is the discovery process, where we are issuing subpoenas for internal documents from the Tiger Swan Military Corporation. We're subpoenaing documents from the North Dakota Public Utilities Service. To find out what the process is by means of which the Energy Transfer Partners made this decision to change the route of the pipeline from 10 miles north of a 92% white community in Bismarck to down under the sole drinking water for 82% Native American people. And we've issued the subpoenas for them. This fight that Sarah had been talking about was the Pipeline Corporation and the police and the sheriff's departments and the state National Guard all humping up and refusing to respond to our discovery demands. And so we've had a major hearing in front of the judge, and he's ordered them all to comply with our subpoenas. And the
wow.
State prosecutors have been obstructing and insisting, for example, that the only place any deposition could be taken is in the courthouse, because there's this arcane statute that says if you're taking depositions in a criminal case, they ought to be held in the courthouse, because the defendant, who is then incarcerated, would be able to participate. But, of course, we've gotten a bail for Chase Ironeye, so he's not incarcerated. We don't have to
take
depositions at the courthouse. They've insisted that the only time we could take any depositions is if the state prosecutor was available to attend. And we pointed out that isn't a requirement. They've got several people in their staff in the prosecutor's office, and they can send anybody to the deposition. And so we've been going through this hand fighting with them, and we've finally broken through now in a hearing just this past week. And so now we've issued all the subpoenas, reissued all the subpoenas for them, and we're going to be starting to take the first deposition on June 6th. We're going to be taking the deposition of the arresting officers, and we take the depositions of the sheriff and to get an overview of the policies and the structure that was set forth to suppress the people. We're taking depositions of the state National Guard, how they mobilized an emergency status and invited law enforcement in from five states all around North Dakota. And we, very importantly, however, we're issued subpoenas to Tiger Swan, so that they have to respond and show us the documents. We're going to be examining their executives to get them to detail to us, you know, how it is that they changed the pipeline route. We need to take depositions of them to find out what their previous history is of being biased against Native American people and other racial minorities, because we're arguing that the moving of the pipeline was predicated upon their realization that the 91% white population of North Dakota, the whitest population in the entire country of any state, harbors this deep-set, class-based, racially motivated hostility toward Native people. And that, therefore, that is why the pipeline company thought they could get away with moving the pipeline right down under their water instead of 10 miles north of the water supply of the 92% white community of Bismarck. So there's this heavy racial overtone to the counterattack that we've mounted, pointing out that this is a racist decision that was made to do this. and the targeting by the Tiger Swan people of Lakota people as anti-Christian, religiously driven, indigenous jihadist terrorists was a mechanism to superimpose the template that they had in the Middle East against tribal people in the Middle East who had risen up to resist the occupation of the Middle Eastern oil fields by the United States military. They've taken that template now, and they're trying to superimpose it upon the tribal people of North America, and asserting that they're tribal people who don't appreciate capitalism and they don't appreciate technology, and that they're basically opposing the pipeline for spiritual and religious reasons.
Is that a problem? Are they not allowed? Are we not allowed to do that? Is that what they're saying?
Well, when you bring in 40 different major religious denominations from all around the country, and they're sitting kneeling down praying in the pipeline, you can hardly get away with saying, "Oh, they're religiously motivated, and so therefore they must be jihadists." You know, so it's a violation of the Constitution. You can't characterize an entire religious group. This is the whole thing they're having with Trump right now. He can't stigmatize all Muslim people and say that they're all terrorists, and therefore none of them can come into the United States. It's the exact replay. You know, this is the Trump administration trying to declare all of the tribal people to be inherently jihadist terrorists. And so that it's a violation of the Constitution. The same constitutional principles that are being violated by Trump's anti-Muslim ban are the same violations are occurring there in North Dakota. And
we have a company who's building a pipeline on land that they don't have clear title. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. In this particular case, it's the land on which all the people were arrested. The Last Child campsite is a site that the Dakota Access Pipeline asserts that they purchased from someone who had purchased the land from the United States government. And what we're saying is the United States government never acquired legal title to that land. So they were unable to sell the land legally to the other party from whom the Dakota Access Pipeline says they bought it. So that, you know, one of the black letter laws governing property is that you cannot purchase from a person a better title to a piece of land than they had. And our argument is that the people who they bought the land from had never acquired a legal title to that land from the United States government. And so therefore the native people have a right to be on the land because it's their land. There's the United States government has no title.
Under the treaties, I would assume the United States government really has no title to that land. Isn't that correct?
That's right. The 1851 treaty, the Fort Laramie, you know, said explicitly that they were not allowed to change the title to the land unless 3/4 of all of the adult males in the tribe signed an agreement to change title to the land. And of course, they never had anything like that. Nothing like that was ever done.
I'll revive the quote I gave to you at dinner the other night from George Washington, who insisted on negotiating treaties, even though many of his contemporaries didn't think they should. He said, and I quote, "It would be a stain on the honor of our nation if we ever broke any of these treaties." And, of course, we've continued to break them. More than 440 duly ratified treaties have been negotiated between the Indians and the indigenous and the United States government, and the U.S. government has broken every one of them. We're talking with Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson of the Romero Institute about the astonishing confrontation in I guess all this is happening in the courtroom in Bismarck, North Dakota. Is that right, Danny?
That's right. It's at Standing Rock. The Standing Rock Reservation is part of the Great Sioux Nation, and the Great Sioux Nation covers that entire territory of North Dakota, South Dakota, parts of Montana and Wyoming and Iowa and Nebraska. That's all the Great Sioux Nation up there.
Where do we stand with the actual physical construction of this monstrosity? Has it stopped?
No. The Obama administration issued an order stopping the pipeline. You remember people knew that he stopped the pipeline, the XL pipeline, from pumping all the tar sands out of Canada across the country. And on December 4th, 2016, the Justice Department and the Department of Interior issued a command to stop construction of the pipeline until such time as there was a full-scale environmental impact statement evaluated, which they never would have passed, of course. And what they did is they ordered them to stop the construction of the pipeline because it was unlawful, and to prohibit the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers from granting an easement over that property. And what happened is as soon as Trump came in on the very first day in office, as you remember, he issued an executive order banning all Muslims from coming into the United States. And the very next day, he issued an executive order ordering the Dakota Access Pipeline to go forward no matter what the environmental rules provided, saying that it was an emergency and they needed to have U.S. energy independence. And that as a matter of national security, he set aside the environmental protection rules. And the fact of the matter is, not one single drop of that oil is going to go to the United States at all. They're building this pipeline all the way from the Canadian border down through the Great Sioux Nation, down all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. And then they're going to be shipping all that oil out to go to China and to other places where they can sell it for twice and three times as much. And as soon as we revealed that, Trump withdrew his position and said that his real purpose was in making not to alleviate any American energy crisis, but instead to make American oil corporations the dominant energy power on the planet. And that's the public policy that he is advocating in support of his executive order. So it's we're nose to nose with the major petroleum industry up in North Dakota, which of course is thumbing its nose at the whole rest of the world. 195 nations, you know, signed the Paris agreements back in December of 2015, and declared that they were going to dramatically reduce the burning of global fossil fuels to preserve us against the global climate change. And this administration under Trump is just thumbing their nose at the world, saying it's an entire hoax. This is a Chinese government hoax that they've perpetrated to try to get the United States government's industry shut down. I mean, it's just like preposterous. And so he's the only person in the world, just like, you know, all the other countries of the world came together and signed the agreement with regard to Iran to stop the building of nuclear weapons in Iran. And here comes Trump and just unilaterally reverses it. This guy is just chaos. He's like that guy in the commercial of the chaos guy that causes, you know, you to get your tie caught in your lawnmower. This guy, I mean, it's just, this guy is a total disaster.
Well, I think what we have to understand also, what we have to understand about Trump and this and the Dakota Pipeline and so much else is that these people, there's no higher principle here. These people are sucking in money. You know, when the woman who delivered the Michelle Wolf, that wonderful monologue she did at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the most radical thing and important thing she said, which nobody picked up on, but it's the most important thing she said, is that Trump doesn't have any money. And, you know, he is using the White House, and he's only the third president to do this, by the way. He's using the White House for direct personal profit. Now, you know, you can fault all our presidents for many different things, but nobody really directly took money except Richard Nixon and Andrew Jackson. And this really goes back to Andrew Jackson, who Trump has listed as his favorite president, and the indigenous, because everybody will yell at Andrew Jackson for being a racist for what he did to the Cherokee and the five civilized tribes, moving them out from, but in fact, it wasn't just that he was a racist. He personally took that land. He actually got personally Cherokee land after he moved the tribes out. And Nixon did much the same thing with the campaign money and a lot of other things he did when he was in the White House. No other presidents really did that so directly. And now you have Trump. And Danny, have you seen any evidence that the backers of this pipeline have personally slipped Trump any money?
Well, I mean, the fact is Trump was one of the partners in the Energy Transfer Partner Corporation.
Rick
Perry. Rick Perry was the executive vice president of Sunoco Logistics, which is one of the partners in Energy Transfer Partner. They had a direct personal financial interest in making this pipeline go forward, because they would have lost their contract if they hadn't been able to complete this pipeline. All of the contracts that they had signed to deliver oil around the world would have been voided. And so that they had a direct personal financial interest in making this pipeline go forward.
I mean, that's staggering. It's just staggering. Yeah. And I assume it's come up in court. I assume you raised this issue. I mean, oh, God. Is there a legal? I mean, you know, I'm speechless. I'm a historian, for God's sakes. I mean, I know these guys. I've taught U.S. history. I know however much someone in this era can know Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and the founders. And, of course, we all on the left have our problems with the founders. But I will guarantee you that if George Washington, if you had a court, if you had a jury of the founders of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, John Adams, Abigail Adams, these guys would just completely go nuts over what Trump is doing to the tribes.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And the problem is the real challenge is that he is so far out of bounds that people are saying, oh, let's just get rid of him and get back to normal. You know, and to go back to normal is just like what was happening before. And so that we have to utilize this opportunity where the right-wing people in the Republican Party have openly displayed what their real ultimate objectives are, is to enrich the robber barons that rose to power, those families between 1868 and 1898 during the robber baron era of Manifest Destiny and the White Man's Burden. And it's just a replay of that because that entire group was in the ascendancy until the socialist revolution took place in Russia at the end of World War I. And they rose up and tried to stave off that imperialist era that was really going on back in that period between 1868 and 1898, when these people and their business lawyers all created these corporations. They created the shareholder-owned stock corporation, and it immunized all of the people who are owners of the property of the company. It immunized all the management. It immunized the board of directors. And therefore, they created a completely sinful structure that had no motive whatsoever except to maximize the short-term profits. And that they've cast off all of the costs onto the community. They poured, poisons and stuff into the rivers. They contaminated the entire environment. They established working rules that put children into enslavement. You know, they had people working 7 days a week, at pennies a day, living in company-owned towns. These are the same people.
Yeah, and it's astounding. I mean, people, I think it's only beginning to dawn on people now. You're starting to hear that the people on TV referring to this administration as gangsters. These guys are just mafia guys. I mean, that's all they are. And Don Corleone.
Well, you need to be a little careful because if they're capable of designating these people as just bad apples, individual bad apples that are gangsters, and then if you go right back to having the country run by corporations and Goldman Sachs and all their financiers, you're in basically the same trouble. I mean, it's just that Trump has made it obvious. That's what it is. Trump has made it obvious as to what they're doing, but they were doing the same stuff before. He's just so crude about it. He's a reductionist who just says, look, I get it. I get what we're allowed to do. Let's just do it. And the Republicans are getting upset because it's exposing them for what it is they really believe. And unless the Democratic Party is willing to take a position
in principle against what it is that these people are doing, it's not going to be that much of an improvement. Republicans to get back into power.
You've spoken the magic words here, Democratic Party. Have you had any help at all from North Dakota or nationally from the Democratic Party or major Democratic Party politicians?
No, but it's important to remember that the National Democratic Party are the ones that nominated Chase Iron Eyes to be the congressional representative. So the Democratic Party has, in fact, been on the side of Chase Iron Eyes. They knew that Chase Iron Eyes was, a spokesperson for the Native American people. The Democratic administration had, in fact, provided grants. They passed statutes when they were in charge. It's a comparative improvement, considerable, over the Republican Party. But the real problem is that there's going to be a major effort on the part of the Republican Party to resuscitate itself, to say, this guy Trump was just a gangster and a criminal. He doesn't really represent us at all. And he clearly does. And so the real question is how clear is the Democratic Party going to be in denouncing not only the gangsterism of Trump, but renouncing the fundamental principles pursuant to which Trump agrees with the rest of the Republican Party? That's what really needs to get done. And so the question is, how clear is that going to be? So you have people in the Democratic Party like Bernie Sanders and the Progressive Caucus. There are 75 members of the Congress that are in the Progressive Caucus. They need to elucidate a genuine, progressive, constructive alternative to what it is that Trump represents, not only pushing out of power the Republican Party, but establishing the progressive dimensions inside the Democratic Party as the ascendant leaders in the Democratic Party, and reach out to the millennials and the new younger people across the country, the new immigrants that are coming in, that they need to mobilize these people in support of a new progressive agenda, not just a non-reactionary agenda. We need to save the planet. We need to save our water. We need to save our working people. We need to save the people who live in the shorelines, by 2050, 63% of the entire human family is going to live within 10 miles of the ocean front. And these are the areas that are going to be inundated with salt water by the increased global temperatures and the increase of the oceans are heating up and they're expanding and they're rising and they're contaminating the seacoast. And the fact of the matter is there's 403 nuclear power plants around the country, all of which are located within 2 miles of the coastline. And so you're going to have these dramatic repetitions of what's going on over in Japan. They're hysterical every day, 24 hours a day, pouring cold water into those melted down cores and letting all of that radioactive contaminated water go out into the ocean, the Pacific Ocean. I mean, this is just...
Well, Danny, in North Dakota, let me jump in here real quick. I mean, as someone who lives in Los Angeles and you're in Santa Cruz, this is really relevant to us very directly. In North Dakota, you've got a senator. I get her emails every day.
Heidi
Heitkamp. And then you must have a Democratic nominee for the one congressional seat in North Dakota.
Yes.
Have they been any help in this case with Chase Iron Eyes?
No, not at all. Not at all. No. The problem up in North Dakota, as is in some other states, that even the Democrats are Republicans. It's the same kind of thing you see down in West Virginia, for example. They call them the Blue Dog Democrats, they're total conservatives. And then they make the argument, we have to be conservative in order to be elected, in order to represent the people. But it's an advantage of the Democratic Party to have a Democrat in the seat, because then it gives the Democrats potential control of the House of Representatives, which will then give them control of the staffing and the chairmanships and all those things. And the most important thing to do is to get control of the Senate to stop the appointment of these federal judges. There's 159 federal judges that have vacated seats because when the Republicans took over the Senate in the second term of Obama, Orrin Hatch from Utah chaired the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he blocked every single nominee of Obama during his entire second term. And so they ended up having 159 vacancies in the federal court. And now Trump, one of the secret things they're engaged in is day by day by day approving more and more and more of these completely reactionary federal judges. They have 23 federal circuit court of appeals judges have been appointed now by Trump. And they have the other massive number of 100 or more federal trial judges that are going to be appointed by Trump. And they're appointing these hardcore right-wing people from the Federalist Society, you know, and they're appointing 35 and 40 year old people to these judgeships so that they'll be there for 50 years. You know, this is an absolute catastrophe that's in the making. That what's going on in Standing Rock is just a microcosm of it. It enables us to focus the attention of the American people on a specific confrontation, which is a caricature of what it is that's going on. But you can see that when you have full-scale military people, U.S. Special Forces trained, millions of dollars of U.S. tax money is used to train these Special Forces guys and then deploy them into the Middle East and train them with the Central Intelligence Agency to neutralize tribal people who are protesting the taking over of their territory. And then you have these people then, quote, retire and go into a private corporation like Blackwater International or Tiger Swan, and then they deploy them here stateside against our American citizens. And they deploy the same exact programs of these what they call citizens diplomacy campaigns, where they're writing up fake news articles and circulating the newspapers. They put fake people on the Internet, just like the Russians did for our election. They plant false people on the Internet pretending that they're independent people, and they're hired by Tiger Swan Private Military Corporation to put out all of this false propaganda about the Native people in North Dakota, playing upon the racial hostility on the part of a significant plurality of the people in North Dakota against Native people. You know, and this is what they're doing. It's the exact type of manipulation that they're accusing Russia of engaging in our country by exacerbating racial hostilities, gender hostilities, you know, all of these lesser angels of our nature here in the United States. And that's exactly what Russia was doing. And now we see our people doing the exact same thing. Just like they're complaining about them interfering in our elections, we paid people to interfere in the elections of Nicaragua. We paid people all during after World War II. The Truman Doctrine, you know, they said we cannot allow the reins of government in any European country to fall into the hands of socialists, even if it is the will of their own people. And they paid fascists to run for office and paid for their campaigns all throughout Europe. They've done the same thing all through Latin America.
It's just what we did in Honduras as well, most recently with Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
And Barack Obama.
Yeah.
So we're talking with Danny Sheehan of the Romero Institute. He's leading the defense of Chase Ironize and the other demonstrators against the Keystone and Dakota pipelines. Danny, again, give us we're almost out of time, unfortunately. How do people get a hold of you? How do they donate to your work? How do they support you?
Easy. The simple way to do it is Lakota Law. .org. It's the easiest one to remember. LakotaLaw.org. Come on to the website and you'll see a donation page. That we need to pay for these transcripts because we're doing depositions. We can issue the subpoenas to these people, but we have to pay travel costs for them to come to the deposition. We have to pay $5 a page for every single page of the transcript. We have to pay for videotaping the deposition so that we can show the videotape to the jury. Because we're taking the depositions down in North Carolina, and if they refuse to come to the trial, we have to have them on videotape so that we can show the jury the testimony. You know, this all costs just out-of-pocket costs for us. You know, we're trying to get people all around the country to help us, because people then become involved and they pay attention to what the issues are that are going on. So we're asking people to go to LakotaLaw.org, go to the donation page, donate whatever it is you're able to donate. It's all tax deductible, but then stay with us, you know, and consult that page regularly, and you'll see what all the things are that are going on in the case and what's happening in the depositions, the information that we're getting. And the trial is scheduled to start on November 5th, which is the day before the November 6th elections for the House and Senate. So we'll be picking our jury on election day. And so we want people to help us get ready so that we can send this message out to follow on the tail of the election, of throwing the people out of control of the House of Representatives. They're going to also try to take over the control of the Senate if possible. But we want people realizing that this trial is raising many of those same fundamental issues, so that when they're hearing about the investigation of Mueller investigating the corruption of the Trump administration, realize that there's another investigation going on at the same time, investigating the major oil companies, Trump's involvement with them, the involvement of Eric Prince in Blackwater, the same people. Eric Prince is the guy that met over in the Seychelles Islands in the United Arab Emirates, you know, with representatives of Putin to try to set up a secret back channel of communications directly between Putin and Trump. That's who this is. That's the head guy from Blackwater. You know, these are the people that we're confronting, the same people. So that there's more than one investigation going on here in the country. And we want people to follow our investigation daily by going to LakotaLaw.org and contribute what you can. As I said, it's $5 a page for each page of the sworn deposition. And it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars to videotape each deposition so that we have the videotapes available to play for the jury. And so we need your help.
Wow, fantastic. Danny, Shannon, and Sarah Nelson. Okay, I've got just a minute or two left. I want to ask you, I want to confirm, I'm writing a history of the United States. It's almost done. It's called America at the Brink of Rebirth, the life and death spiral of U.S. history from Daganoweda, the great Iroquois leader, to the Donald. And then when it comes to Iran-Contra, you broke these stories. Is this a fair characterization of what happened? The United States government, possibly in repayment for Reagan's having the hostages held so that he would get elected, sold weapons to the Iranians, took the money, and gave the money to the profits to the Contras in Nicaragua, who were importing cocaine into the United States, which Ron and Nancy used as an excuse to lock up millions of Americans for drug abuse. Is that a fair characterization of what happened?
Yes, I don't think they were using the drug as the excuse to lock up millions of Americans. I think that their entire predisposition toward fascism and authoritarianism is what was, and racism, was focusing on the black people. The reason that they sold the cocaine and crack into the black neighborhoods is because they knew they could get away with it. The exact same thing they're doing up in North Dakota. The reason they built the pipeline directly under the sole water source of the native people is because they knew they could get away with it, because the white people wouldn't be upset about it. That's why they were importing the cocaine into the United States. I've never believed that they did it intentionally to try to poison and kill the black people. They were doing it because they thought they could get away with it. We need to make clear that that's just as illegal as if you did it specifically to eliminate the black people. You can't get away with that in the United States. You cannot, in fact, do something because against the racial minority because you know you can get away with it, because that's racist. And you can't do that. You can't do it in North Dakota. You can't do it in Los Angeles.
Well, you guys are our first and last line of defense here, Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson. It's always an honor to talk with you and to keep up your great work. You know, we're really skating on the edge here of a totally fascist state.
We're skating on the edge. But that's our incarnation. We happen to be here at this particular time in history, and we have to answer the call. We do not. We do.
Okay, buddy. Thank you so much.
Okay,
we'll talk to you again soon. Keep up.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost.